This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello folks, and welcome back to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. I'm Barry Murphy, news correspondent here on the team. On this week's episode, we're going to discuss how farmers are set to be paid to make more fodder, dairy quotas, aid payments for the pig sector, farmer reaction to controversial re-wetting laws, and cap convergence. We'll also hear from news correspondent Rachel Donovan, who joined the Agricultural Consultants Association AGM on Thursday. We'll kick into it now, and first up we're going to speak to our political correspondent and Wexford man, Pat O'Toole. Pat, we returned to dairy quota fears on the front page this week. There was a degree of mixed messaging from Ag House in recent days, a bit of he said and she said. What are farmers to make of it all?
I think farmers can probably take the words of Sinead McPhillips at face value. She is a high-ranking department official, and she attended the Food Vision Dairy High-Level Group, and she laid it out on the line. She said, unless farmers themselves or the group themselves and the stakeholders and the co-ops can come up with a plan, there are three options going to be put on the table by government. The first one is a straight cow quota in terms of numbers of cows on an individual farm. The second one is a milk quota in terms of the volume of litres that can go out of an individual farm. And the third one is a carbon quota, where each farm will get a carbon quota, which is effectively a stocking quota, because the carbon excretion on dairy farms is from the animals. So a carbon quota and a cow quota are pretty much the same thing. The three options are really only two options. And that contrasted very sharply with what we heard only a few days earlier from Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader Leo Varadkar, when he met with the various farm organisations and was making the same soothing noises that we've heard from government all year around there'll be no cut in cow numbers. We can achieve the required reduction in carbon under the sectoral plan through the measures in the MAC curve and through adaptation of technology, and that cow numbers are not under review. The language from government has been similar to that right through the last 15 months. Charlie McConlogue probably kicked the ball off set the ball rolling back in at the IFA AGM in January of 2021. He talked about dairy farming in Ireland and dairy expansion was starting to approach the ceiling. And, you know, that kind of talk indicated a soft landing. But there won't be a soft landing, because the base year will be in the past. It may be 2018, it may be 2021, but with the cow numbers on the ground this year, with the ICBF's projections for continual expansion, with the knowledge that last year saw an increase in milk output by over 6%, we can safely say that if a limit is brought in, it's probably going to mean a cut on current cow numbers, yeah, and certainly on future cow numbers, yeah, that have already been planned and budgeted for by farmers.
Sound, Pat. You've also been looking at the cap convergence effect, which has been revealed by the department's own calculator. Is it what we were expecting?
It is. We would have modelled out quite a few scenarios late last summer. The big difference, I think, between now and then in terms of the overall effect is when we were modelling, we did make a provision for front loading, even though the farmer organisations were saying there would be no front loading. But we put CRIS front loading in at 5%. It's been imposed at 10%. So that's, you know, that's having a very significant effect on higher payments. Having said that, the convergence is still a very significant factor for high recipients. If we go through the models, what we see, I took four fictitious farmers and we model them out in this week's paper. And we also put in a ready reckoner and a link to the carbon or to the CAP calculator, which will calculate your payments for you on the department's website. So there's a link there where you can go in and get your own exact figures. We also put links to the original, you know, in-depth stories. What we did was we took a farm in 2004. We looked at what it had done during the reference years in terms of the Fischler decoupled payments, and we've tracked them right through the last two decades. And I think that shows, you know, the trend of payments. Most Irish farmers are still doing pretty much the same things they were doing back then. So the effect on dry stock farmers and sucker farmers in particular has been profound. So we took an intensive finisher with very high payments, and he's going to lose 44% of his current payment by 2026. We took a farmer on 52 hectares, a sucker farmer, who was on relatively high payments because he was subbing out all his cattle, claiming all the premia on his cattle during the reference years. So he started out in 2004 with a payment of 29,000 on 52 hectares, 558 euros a hectare. That has shrunk to 20,500 at the moment. The entitlements are now worth 394 euros a hectare. By 2026, his payment will have gone down to 297 euros a hectare, another 25% drop. And his payment at 15,461, that's barely half what it was in 2004. And remember, this is a sucker farmer finishing his own cattle. We know from the CSO figures and from the Chagas National Farm Survey figures that such farmers have an income which is way below the average industrial wage. And this, we also know that premia account for about 90% of such sucker farmers' income. So this is a 15,000 euro cut in his income over the last 20 years. And it represents a cut in his current income of 5,000 between 2022, this year's payments, and 2026. That's real money. Now, if you flip over then, the farmers who sold the subs, in other words, the typical sucker farmer who sold the cattle as weanlings with the premium still left on them, they really lost out under the Fischler reforms. And the Cholos reforms and the current reforms are supposed to fix that. Well, we have a guy called Johnny O'Leary, a very same farm profile as Paddy Murphy, except he was selling all his cattle with the subsidies still available, with the premiums still available on them. He started out with a payment of only 16,000, little over half his neighbours, even though they were running identical farms to all extents and purposes. He didn't gain anything under the Cholos reforms. He went down to 15,335. He's lost out through line cuts and such things in recent years. So he's now on 14,326. His entitlements are worth 276 euros a hectare. That's more than the average, but still only significantly lower than his neighbour. He's never gained. And believe it or not, under the current proposals under convergence, he's going to lose another 9%. So this poor devil, who lost out under the original Fischler reforms, he's lost out under Cholos, and he's going to lose out again, and he's going to end up with a payment of under 14,000. And then the last case we came to was an average farmer, 32 hectares, some of it's commonage, 10 hectares of commonage. He has 15 sucker cows, the average sucker cow. He has 100 yos, the average yo flock. He was on 7,356 euros back in 2005. In 2021, that had gone up by 100 euros. His entitlements are worth 233 euros. He's getting 7,456. He will gain under the conversion, or under Chris, the front loading. So he's in 2023, he's going to go up to 8,214. That's a gain of 250, gain of about 800 euros. What will convergence do for that farmer, this average farmer? It will give him 4 euros a year in total. So he's going to gain about 9%, but almost nothing past 2023. Any gains will be in the first year, and convergence is of almost no use to him. So those are the four cases we've profiled in detail this week. I think every farmer needs to look at this. I know fuel is an issue, fertilizer is an issue. It's a very busy time of the year, but these payments are absolutely central to the viability of all dry stock farms, and there are over 100,000 dry stock farms in the country.
Thanks, Pat. And as you've said there, listeners can see more detail on that in this week's paper.
The Irish Farmers Journal has now reached our highest ever readership with 321,000 weekly print readers. Thank you for your support.
Move to news correspondent Declan O'Brien next, folks. Dec, you report on the front page of this week's paper that farmers are going to pay to make more fodder this year. We've been hearing the minister flag a need for us to produce more grain since the weekend, and he met with farm organisations on Tuesday night to discuss how this could be done. It's all coming down to supply fears brought about by the war in Ukraine. What's the story?
Well, it's a reflection on the continuing volatility in across the economy, across politics, across farming. There's fears now for that the large amount of feed that Ireland brings in every year, we import close to 4 million tons of feed, and that there's going to be shortages this year, this winter coming. So there's a drive on to increase the acreage under crops. Now, there was no detail given from this meeting on Tuesday night. I think it's exploratory. But there was a new committee established, the National Fodder and Food Security Committee, with the farm organisations, and they're going to draw up a plan to kind of address the issues that are coming down the road. And I suppose if you're looking at those issues, you could describe them as the three Fs and maybe one fourth F. And the fourth F is flux. Everything appears to be in flux. We've got fertilizer prices going through the roof. We've got feed prices soaring. And you've got fuel prices surging. So it is an effort to control all three areas, you know, and the impact was seen this week. We had diesel going to 140, agri-diesel hitting 140 cents a litre and hitting close on 2 euros a litre for road diesel and petrol. We have Yara announcing that it's going to curtail production of fertiliser. We already saw this week that Ireland, that the usage of fertiliser in Ireland is likely to be back by 25%. We covered that in the paper, and that's a Tagus prediction, and that was backed up by what the industry players are seeing themselves. Both Glanbia said that they were back about 25% sales of fertilizer in January and February. Similarly, Lakeland said that they were back 27% for the 2 months. Now, both said that demand had increased sharply and buying had increased sharply since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But are the supplies there to meet that demand? And this week, with Glanbia deciding to kind of withdraw its prices and its fertilizer prices, we see the disruption that's going on in the market, you know, and like some of the independent merchants are saying that if Glanbia suppliers or Glanbia customers come looking to them, that they won't have the stocks to feed this demand. On top of that, then we have surging feed prices, and the impact of that has been seen in the pig sector, you know, where there's there's proposals for a rescue package for the pigmen. So it is right across the sector. This problem is, or these difficulties are impacting, and really the sector is struggling to take the punches that have been landed at the moment.
Sound deck, thanks very much. We have full coverage in this week's paper of how the war in Ukraine continues to impact farming in Ireland and global food trading. We're moving to news correspondent Noel Barden next. Page 13 of the paper, Noel, you examine the detail of the emergency aid payment scheme now open for pig farmers. Declan mentioned it there. How can farmers apply?
Yeah, well, I suppose there is one scheme finalised by the Department of Agriculture, and the funding has been allocated by the National Exchequer. So this scheme will be separate to some of the more recent proposals that might have been mentioned by Declan and are covered in this week's paper. So the measure that has been finalised is the once-off pig exceptional payment scheme, and €7 million has been allocated to the department to administer this scheme for pig farmers. To qualify for the scheme, pig farmers must have produced more than 200 pigs in 2021. And they could have either slaughtered these pigs themselves or sold them on for finishing, the department have said. Farmers can claim between €3,000 and €20,000 each, depending on the number of pigs that they did produce in 2021. Even if farmers were to max out at the €20,000 payment, the scheme itself will do very little to influence the situation facing these farmers. Chagas had predicted that the average size pig farmer was to lose roughly €450,000 euros in a 12-month period over 2021 and 2022. And this month alone, pig farmers could be looking at losses in excess of €40,000. And these predictions would have been made before the Russian invasion of Ukraine as well, and before any of the increased volatility and the feed high and the hikes in the costs associated with producing food.
Thanks, Noel. You also report on the IFA's response to the controversial rewetting laws facing farmers. You broke this story from Europe last month. How's the reaction been, and what does the IFA have to say about it?
Yeah, so in late February, we published details of the European Commission's proposal to impose legally binding ecosystem-specific targets on nature restoration for each member state. Under the proposal, Ireland would have to rewet more than 100,000 hectares of its drained farmed peatlands, and there would be fairly stringent targets in relation to Natura 2000 lands. So they would be your SACs or your SPAs, your designated lands. The IFA have said that they had seen the document, and the IFA president, Tim Cullinan, had originally planned on meeting with official to discuss the IFA's concerns with the document. This meeting hadn't went ahead, and it is postponed for a date later this month. But Tim Cullinan, the IFA president, he did sit in on a meeting where the heads of European farm organisations expressed their concerns with the targets, which they have said are stringent, with officials from the European Commission. And I suppose what the IFA have said is that farmers should be fully compensated for these rewetting works. So that refers to the land works themselves, as well as the associated loss of productivity and the decreased land value that would go along with rewetting this farmland. To make these payments, they've said that new funding mechanisms must be established. They pointed to a piece in the regulation itself that said that a lack of resources had seen member states fail to increase biodiversity parameters in the past, and that this should be avoided moving forward into the future. Another area that the IFA have pointed out that there needs to be more clarity brought to is that there's currently no member state specific costings listed in the proposals that have been seen or discussed by the IFA and by its European umbrella body, COPA. So they really are looking for a breakdown of the figures to see what it's going to cost farmers, what it's going to cost the department, and then really doubling down on calling for farmers to be fully compensated for any works that they do to help Ireland reach these targets.
Thanks, Noel. It'll be interesting to see where that all goes. We're going to change the subject now and go to news correspondent Rachel Donovan, who's been at the Agricultural Consultants Association AGM. The members heard from Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConlogue on Thursday morning. Rachel reports more.
So, Tom, there's going to be a range of new schemes in the next CAP. How are advisors placed to aid farmers with applications for these schemes? And does ACA see any issues with the new schemes?
Thanks, Rachel. Look, at in terms of the schemes, look, the broad range of schemes are very similar to what we dealt with in the last round of CAP. So we are familiar with them. We have been involved at the CAP consultation process there in terms of improving these schemes, in terms of farmers being able to avail of the schemes on the long-term basis and easing the administrative burden on ourselves as advisors. So we can effectively get these schemes to work far more effectively for farmers and for the advisor in the future. So look, I think we're very well placed at this stage. If you take it between ourselves and our counterparts in Chagas, we have advisory contact with over 100,000 farmers a year, which is a huge positive. So I think that record of engagement with farmers is there already. And I think we need to build on that and, you know, get ourselves organised. And I listened to John Muldowney here in his presentation to our AGM there today, and it's welcoming to hear that's a process where we can actually go out and advise farmers in terms of their options under, we'll say, the environmental schemes, you know, that we're getting out there earlier compared to the old GLAS system, where we were very strongly confined with the tranche system that we had to operate. Very limited time to get out there and to discuss the options with farmers. Now we have that opportunity to do it, so we can better advise farmers on the options that will suit their particular farms. I think as well as that, I think it's important as well to note that we have clarity as well going forward in terms of the future of all of the schemes. You know, we've had the rollover of the GLAS schemes and the TAM schemes, which was vitally important. A bit disappointing, obviously, not to see the discussion groups of the KT rolled over and right up to the end of 2022. And again, it's a bit disappointing that we're not seeing KTs being introduced again until 2024. So overall, I think that the clarity was vitally important. And I think there that, you know, we have a team of extremely qualified, professional, experienced advisors on the ground in ACA, providing good trusted support to the farmers. So I think overall, I'd be very positive about it. I think we'll be able to handle it. But it has to be on a phased basis, and I think acknowledgement has to be given to the workload in front of us as advisors in the future.
And Tom, I suppose, how is ACA's relationship with Chagas?
I'd have to say that, you know, I think we needed to look in-house, firstly, to ensure that our own members were working together and cooperating together. I said a couple of years ago down in Tullamore that we had a disunited League of Nations. We're separate, independent businesses. I've seen that. I think that's a key element of what we've tried to do in my presidency and in Owen O'Driscoll's previous to this, is trying to get our own members working together, firstly. And secondly, is to establish a very strong relationship between ourselves and Chagas. And we welcome the appointment of Frank O'Mara and, you know, his team there. And for the first time ever, we met them there at the back end of last year, shortly after Frank's appointment. And, you know, we have, you know, committed at this stage to looking at establishing and signing off on a memorandum of understanding of the way that both of our organisations operate. Because I think it's crucial that all of the advisory services in Ireland are pulling in the one direction for the good of all farmers. And as I said to you, the real positive is that we have one of the highest rates of engagement with advisory service providers in Europe at over 100,000 of the 130,000 farmers. I think it's, you know, we have a huge responsibility to help our clients develop their businesses, to develop a sustainable agricultural system here that's profitable, good for the environment, and has a good life-work balance for the clients that we're dealing with here as well. And Teagasc have a role to play in that, we have a role to play in it, but there has to be equality in terms of the distribution of support services and access to information that wasn't there in the past. But I think there is an understanding at both the government level, within the Department of Agriculture and other stakeholders, and within Teagasc itself, that there's a need for closer cooperation in the future, and we'd welcome that, and we're certainly willing to come on board with that.
Thanks, Rachel. You can read more on that on the Irish Farmers Journal online. That's all we have time for this week's folks. Don't forget you can also tune in to the Down to Agribusiness podcast, where market specialist Phelim O'Neill and deputy editor Jack Kennedy discuss Glanbia's results and what they mean, as well as Origin Enterprises' half-year results and Brazil's 30-year fertilizer plan. Thanks for listening and talk to you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.